face the sun. Tell me what you do. Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast, episode number 2. This is a solo episode, and I had a guest, but it fell through. But what the hell? Who cares? We all know I can talk, and so get ready for a lot of long-winded Justin. I wanted to say thank you to everybody for helping me out with the Clorox thing. Some of you may or may not have heard on the Facebook page that I did not win. I came in as a runner-up. So in the event that Frances dies, then all of her last comic sitting duties would fall to me, which I think means that there is like a state of the toilet type situation that has to be given. I will also help negotiating any kind of toilet seat situations in houses across America. That's another duty that she's going to be taking care of. She'll be touring all over. She's going to be very busy. I asked for the title to be Lieutenant. Last comic sitting, like a lieutenant governor, but they said, you know, runner-up is the thing that they suggested. So, but that was fun. The day of was horrible, if I could be honest. For those of you that listen to the show that are the stay-at-home parents, sometimes when you have something else that you want to do, your children are not aware of that, and they do everything it seems that they can to make it that much more difficult. That was what was happening to me on that day. I couldn't get Jack, you know, to go down for a nap easily, and I'm trying to go through my material to figure out what I'm going to say, and I'm in my head, and then he, like, had, like, an hour-long screaming fit that I was like, oh, my gosh, and Jacob was okay, you know, but it's just, you know, when you got there's two of them, one of me, and Natalie came home, and I was having a rough go, and then she topped it all off by saying, hey, can you text me the address to the theater? And as we know, as married folk, for those of us that are fortunate, as I will say, to be married, you save those special moments of frustration and anger for the people you love the most, which makes no sense at all, because I will instantly shit on my wife on the drop of a pin. But you know, I've had jobs where I've had bosses that I hate. There are people that I don't like to hang out, and I will put a smile on the people that I care the least about. I am the most courteous and compassionate to, but the one woman that I love more than anything in this world, it doesn't take anything for me to just go, really? Is this what you fucking need? And so on this given moment, because Jacob was asking for something, Jack was a little fussy. And then she says, oh, and can you text me the address as she's leaving for her lunch break? And I go, great. Everybody needs something. That's what I need right now. I don't need to sit and be able to think about what I have to talk about tonight to try to win 10 grand. Nope. That's what's more important is that I handle everything for everybody, because that's, you know, very mature of me. And she's like, oh, well, I guess I'll look it up. And then, of course, instead of me being the mature person and saying, oh, okay, thank you, dear, or something, I'm like, no, fuck you. I'm going to send this to you. So instantly I figured it out and like got the address and sent it to her for the theater. So the sitter showed up, went down there, was really nervous, to be honest. And then when I got there, was fine. Like, it kind of washed away, and I was goofing around with the production people and having a good time. And so it came time for us that we did like a coin toss thing, and I got to meet Sherry Shepherd. She was very nice, delightful. And everybody was running around kind of like with chickens with their heads cut off, because they had one day in the theater. So it's a very like crazy environment. So I'm just trying to crack wise with the production people there to kind of get them to calm down and have a little fun. And then so we do our sets. And then, of course, I find out that I lost. And it was a weird thing in that moment, because here's what happened. They did a conference call with us the week of, and they said, you know, here's what we think you should cover. They said there's bonus points if you can, you know, kind of work the bathroom or like even Clorox into your routine. And I was like, oh, well, I'm a shoo-in, because I was going to do my potty training chunk of material that I had. And so I'm like, this is going to be cake, you know. They also said don't reference anything. So in my potty training material, I have a joke where I say that potty training didn't go well and I tried everything. I give him M&Ms like he was a freaking dolphin. That didn't work. And I had to change it to candy, which I know maybe to you guys listening at home, maybe you're like, well, what's the big difference? But and maybe it's mental. I don't know. But there is something to be said that if you can paint a specific picture in somebody's head through, you know, your words, then it's funnier. And so that it's like it's taking away a little bit. You know what I mean? It's downgrading my weaponry is what it is. And so I was like, okay. And then, you know, when we go out there, I realize after I lost that part of what I did, and I'm not trying to, now I sound like some wide receiver after the playoff game. I'm not trying to take away anything from what Frances did. I think she did what she had to do, and they came out and they played a good game and they beat us fair and square. And that's how it works. But you can't help but look back and go, what if, you know? And so I felt like I worried too much about what was said in the conference call, and the judges were not on the conference call. So they just saw and they picked the better set, and she had the better set. She had much more energy. She was, you know, it was good, you know? So, but the best part though is after I lost, I don't know. It was really surreal because they bring us both up there. This was another weird moment. They bring us both up there, and Sherry Shepherd's kind of trying to fill time and do the host thing. And she goes, all right, it's time to announce. She goes, are you nervous? And she puts the mic in front of my face. And they had a toilet set like behind us. It was a set of a bathroom. And I said, yeah, I'm a little, I think I might actually have to use, I think I might have to do my own ode to the commode, I think is what I meant to say. I might have just said I might have to use the commode and indicate it behind me. I got to laugh. And then she goes to Frances, is like, how about you? She's like, I just cleaned the commode, which made no sense in the moment. And I think, and then when Sherry like gave her a beat and then pulled the microphone away, and she was like, wait, she goes, well, after he used it. So essentially trying to do some kind of joke that I guess I had some kind of Thai food situation and I had pad thai'd all over her toilet. I don't know. I didn't get it, and neither did the crowd there. And so then I was like, so that was kind of awkward for Sherry. And then we go into it, and then they announced the winner, and I heard her name, and I was like, oh, well, that sucks. And I was honestly bummed, but not as bummed as everybody treated me. Like, it was really weird. Like, I shook Frances's hand. I told her, you know, she gave me a hug, and I said to her, congratulations, you did a great job. And then they had like a warm up person that was there just upstage. And I didn't want to stand on stage while they're trying to, you know, it's her moment. So I just go back. I go, do you guys need me to do anything else? And the producer that was there, and she was also like doing the warm up stuff and everything. And she was one of the writers for the whole thing. And she goes, yeah, I think you're good. Like, so she was fine. But when I walked backstage, and these poor production people, they had worked their asses off. I don't want it to sound like I'm crapping on them. I'm just trying to talk about the awkward aftermath of losing. It was a weird, you know, like post inappropriate coitus type situation where they're just, everybody's wide-eyed and going, oh, like, it's what I would imagine it would have felt like after an orgy, you know, like the idea of an orgy maybe seems appealing and stuff, and then you kind of get there and then it's a bunch of people that you really would only see on Real Sex and never on any kind of even a U-porn situation. So they're just, I don't know if anybody else has noticed, but on Real Sex, they find the ugliest like people they could possibly find. And then it's supposed to be a show that's like, yeah, let's do this. Let's learn about some real sex. And it is real sex. It is not, there's no airbrushing. There is no plastic surgery. It is, I can't get off on that diatribe. But anyway. So I walk off stage, I go into the wings, the stage manager is sitting there, and I go, hey, thanks so much. And they go, oh, we're so sorry. And they gave me this envelope that had like a note in it for the runner-up. I was like, oh, thank you. And then I go, well, is there anything else that you guys need me to do? And she goes, you know, that's up to you. That's like, and they're all looking at me like I'm about to have a breakdown, right? And I go, well, if you don't need me for anything, I was just going to head home. Like, because here's the way I think that it's possible. I think that it's easy for them to look at it and go, oh, this poor guy just won $10,000 or lost $10,000. And now he's incredibly distraught and wants to get out of here before he has an emotional breakdown. And you that listen to the show, especially for a long time, know that I am prone, like I cried at Real Steel. So it's not too far fetched to believe that I would cry. But these people don't know me. And I was fine. Like, I was just like, it was weird week. I taped my CD and then I was getting ready for this thing and it was just a lot. And this was like, you know, I don't know if anybody else does this, but you have that thing where it's like, oh, if I could just get through this, you know, thing, then, oh, things are going to be so much easier. And so that's what this was. I was like, as soon as I could wrap up this Clorox thing, then I can move on with my life and I could go back to just doing stand up and doing my podcast, which I'll get into that a little bit later. But, So she says, I go, okay, well, I'm just going to go to my dressing room. And then I realize I have the mic pack on. And I turn around and go, oh, well, do you want me to just leave this in my dressing room? And this was my favorite part. She goes, you know, I got to be honest. I'm just flying by the seat of my pants here. So I go, okay. And I put my hand on her shoulder and kind of rubbed her. I go, are you okay? Because I'm okay. I'm really okay. Like, I'm just fine. I just want to go home. Like, I don't want to be here because I've done what I need to do here. And I want to go start being a guy again who sits on the couch and cries at Real Steel. That's what real men do in America now. And I go, so then she's like, I don't know. And I go, how about I just give it to you then? And she goes, if that's what you think is best. Like, it was, I hope I'm doing it justice, because it was weird to be thinking that you're having one conversation, but actually having another one, like, back at you. Like, they were reacting like I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know. Or I'm just, like, angrily cussing out Francis and all that stuff. And, oh, my wife told me this other thing, which I thought was interesting. And this is why I'm not a big, big fan of competitions. I think, A, because I'm not competitive enough. And then, B, that it, I don't know. Maybe I'm arrogant, you know, but this is my forum. This is where I have people that appreciate and like what I do. And so I could say this is that I know I'm funny. I've said it on the show. I'm amazing. I'm half of a dynamic now, but that's different. But I know I'm funny, and I know I'm funny even in the moment. Not everybody is on 100% in the time, but like after she won, they go, what are you going to do with the $10,000? Sure, Shepard asked her. This is what my wife told me, because I was already backstage having awkward post-orgy conversation with the production people. And they said, she goes, what are you going to do with the $10,000? And she says, buy Clorox. And like, I think she was trying to do another bit, but it just came across as like awkwardly sarcastic, my wife was telling me. And she goes, yeah, I'll do that, because then it'll be a wash. Like, she tries to do some kind of, I don't know what was, you know, but she probably was thinking, oh my gosh, I have $10,000. This is great. Maybe, you know, I don't know. So it's a weird thing where you kind of feel like you're the better person. I'm sure she agreed, only she gets to walk away going, this went the way it should have gone. So I go downstairs, give the mic pack. I go downstairs to get my hanger for my jacket, and I'm walking away. And then the judges come by, and they were all very nice. They go, you did such a great job. I go, thank you guys so much. And it's got to be awkward for them. You know, they're two of them were comedians, too. It was Brian Kiley, who's a guy from who writes for Conan. And then Carol Leifer, who a lot of you may remember, she's a huge comic in the 80s and helped write Seinfeld. And if memory serves me correct, she's the person that Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character in Seinfeld is based upon. And so they were all very polite, and they were very sweet and said, you know, oh, it was great. You know, good job. It was a really hard decision. I'm, oh, thank you, you know. And then I'm assuming it was Sherry Shepherd's manager walked by, and she goes, you know what? They should love what you did out there. You branded the shit out of them. They should love you. Like, oh, that's very sweet. She's like, no, they should love you. And that's, and it kind of brought me back to where it's like, I wasn't even in that moment. I wasn't like, right? Seriously? This did not go the way it should have, you know, like, but I just thought that was a thing where I'm like, yeah, I thought I did what they talked about on the conference call. Now that was what I was going to plan to do anyway. I don't think I would have changed my mind had they said anything differently. But I just felt like it made it a bigger rug to kind of yank out from underneath me. But again, you know, like, it's not life ending. And that's what it was nice as far as like perspective. And this is why I bring this all up. I'm bringing this all up to provide the backstory for how I think that we have this happen in our marriages and in our relationships, too. I come home, or I come outside, and I tell Natalie where I am. And she goes, OK, so she comes around and meets me. She gives me a hug. She goes, you did such a good job and everything. You know how when you're married, you get a vibe, you get a sense of what the other person is thinking, even though you don't know exactly it, but you do kind of know when something's up, you know, that you just kind of feel there's just something's not right. So I'm talking to Natalie about the whole experience and everything and why I thought I did what I did and why it didn't work and why she did deserve to win and even, you know, even that stuff. But then there was something just weird that Natalie wasn't saying to me, you know? And so then we drive home, and then we're debriefing the sitter, telling her what happened, and then she leaves. And then Natalie doesn't talk to me. Like, and here's what I realized that is hard, and I even told this to her the next day, is that it sucks to be married to me because I like to talk. Like, I'm not, I don't think, I don't know. I don't think, I think, I personally think that there are more guys like me than there are in the stereotype, but stereotypes exist for a reason. So maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I don't think every dude cries at Real Steel, but I do think that there are dudes who like to talk things out and be like, no, listen, I need to get this off my chest. And clearly, because I do a podcast and I talk for a living, I like to talk things out. So when you don't talk to me, what that starts doing is I get into my own head and I'm just going nuts. I can't process it. Like, she thinks that, oh, he's not going to want to talk about this. He, you know, he lost and he's disappointed. So I'm going to take care of the kids and I'm just going to go do my own thing. And what I was sitting there thinking, I'm like, is she embarrassed by me? Like, I start getting disappointed in myself. And I told her the next day when we actually did talk about it, I said, you know what? I go, you are the love of my life. You are the single most important thing to me. Your opinion is, honest to God, the one that matters above anyone else. When it all, like, all goes away. And I said, even if you don't like it and you didn't like what I did, you thought I could have done better, I need to hear that from you. Because if you don't tell me that, honest, like, that's what I think is, and I know that everybody has their own little things that they don't tell, you know, their husbands or their wives, but what I like about my personal marriage is that it is 100% honest. Whether, no matter how hurtful or anything that is said, it is said. And so when I felt that thing, if she was holding something back, and I go, it must be really bad. She must be really disappointed in me, because we've said horrible things, you know, to each other, and out of love. And she won't say this. And I'm like, oh my God, she really thought I choked. And I had a chance to help my family and, you know, actually make, you know, a good chunk of change, you know, for them. And now I'm just a disappointment. I start, like, everything starts breaking down in my head. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't want this to another solo episode. I'm fine. Like, I'm just sitting here realizing that every time he goes by himself, he just kind of gets sad and depressed all the time. but I was then where I was like, oh my gosh, I can't take care of my family. She thinks I'm a loser, like all this stuff. And then later on we talked about it, and all she said was she had more energy, and you normally have a ton of energy when you get out on stage, and you didn't do that. So I knew she had some kind of criticism, but as soon as she said that, and I knew what it was, and then here's the other thing, she said, but honest, Justin, you were under a ton of pressure. That's a lot of money to us, and you know, you're trying to, you know, do what you can, and you took care of the kids all day and then rushed out to do that. You didn't get any sleep the night before because we have a baby and like all that stuff. And all I needed to know was that I wasn't crazy for feeling that. Like, that took everything off of my chest. I was like, oh, this is fine now. Okay, good. My wife and I are on the same page, because I felt the pressure of it. And I would like to say that I'm like Peyton Manning or somebody who's just got ice running through my veins. But no, fuck you. I'm just a guy who has two kids who is looking at $10,000 going, oh my God, that would really help us out right now. That would be amazing. And then you get that man thing in you where it's like, I'm a provider. I'm going to fucking go out and I'm going to kill a wild boar and bring it back. And then she's going to dress it and cook it. And, it, you know, you as much as that's, you know, I don't know, frowned upon as far as like sexist or misogynistic, I think that we are wired that way. I really believe it. And that as we've become more and more civilized, we learn to look past that animalistic wiring, and I could sit here and take care of the kids and she could go earn the paychecks. And that's what life is now. But I just think that, so what's the point? Why I bring this up? I think that even though how bad it was, I had an idea that she felt like it was bad, and the fact that she wasn't bringing it up to me, as soon as she told me that she thought, oh, you didn't do as good as I thought you could have did. Not that she was trying to, she was afraid that she was going to end up shitting on me and that it was going to just put me into a further spiral. And that's when I told her, I said, well, I guess it's hard to kind of deal with me because, you know, I felt like I needed to talk to you. I need to do this. This is what I need to talk. And then that helps me. And then you say things that make me go, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And then it was over. And as soon as I heard her say, that was a lot of pressure. I don't know how. She told me she told the babysitter. And I think this is what we do in marriage. This is how dumb we are as people. Is you tell these things. Like, maybe you go to work and you hear guys bitching about their wives or whatever. And then you're like, fuck, my wife's pretty awesome. But you don't go home and then say it. You walk in the door and she's, you know, left an ice cube tray out. And you're like, what the fuck is this? How many times do I have to... And it's dumb, but it's true, but it's dumb, you know? So if she would have told me that, like, she's like, oh yeah, it was a ton of pressure. I don't know how you, she, then she just went nuts and it made me feel amazing. Cause she was like, it's hard to do what you do. I see how hard it is and how, like, I believe that you have a talent and yes, I know this gets a little cheesy, but she's my wife. She, and I love her and she supports me. And that's what makes her an amazing mom and an amazing wife. And that's what I think that a lot of wives and moms end up doing that kind of makes them the unsung heroes. And that a lot of ways your job as women is to kind of pump us up a little. You know what I mean? Like you kind of got to, you know, inflate our egos. And I think, too, that I and we talked about with Gina. That's what I'm thinking of here is that I think as a guy, it's also your job to kind of return the favor. But you don't always think of it, I guess, is what I'm also trying to say. So that was my Clorox experience. So moral of the story, tell everybody how amazing they are and all that jazz. And speaking of which, I do want to thank all of you guys for helping me out and for voting. It really, I hate it when I don't have someone else here because I get afraid of how I come across, which is stupid. So I'm going to move past it right now. I'm not going to think about it anymore. But honestly, it really does touch me. Like I really, that's the thing that when I walked off stage, even after I lost, I went in there knowing this to try to knock off the nerves. I said, you know what? You're thinking about how great it would be to have $10,000 and you get in those, you kind of spin it into where this is a pivotal moment. Like you think you're in your own action movie and you're about to defuse the bomb and save Los Angeles and all this stupid stuff. Everything gets heightened in your own head. And all I had to do, honest to God, no bullshit. All I had to do is go, you know what? If this was a popularity contest, I would have this in the back because I have an amazing group of people that love what I do. And they appreciate it. And it, as much as, you know, it's hard for me to kind of acknowledge that, I want to, like, even saying it right now, I want to go, come on, don't be a pompous windbag. But I don't think it is pompous. I think I'm honestly returning an appreciation. And that's all I want. Honest to God, that's why I do this show. As weird as it is, it's not to feel like some attention need, but it's that this is what I think I'm good at. I think I'm good at talking and kind of making observations that kind of and people listen and they go, oh yeah, maybe I didn't see it that way, and kind of making them chuckle. And I don't have any real filter. Like I don't have a thing that I'm not cool talking about. I'm comfortable talking about my sex life. I'm comfortable talking about my weaknesses. And I found through this show a new voice and a new outlet that I think unintentionally wasn't the intent. It was just me fucking bullshitting, and some people it helps, and so that gives me a purpose and I feel great about it. And Jack, speaking of purpose, is waking up, so I got to go give him his pacifier. I'll be right back after these messages.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
All right, so I'm back. So long story short, when I didn't win or when I was going into it, I said, you know what, whether you win or you lose, you still have a stand-up career that is going well and you're on the up and up and there's some cool things that could possibly happen. And you have a bunch of kick-ass people that, honest, that's a big compliment that say, I like listening to this guy, you know, bullshit with his friends or maybe even by himself for an hour once a week. So that's outstanding. So thank you, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. I'm an idiot. But I feel great, by the way. It's amazing. I think anybody who has more than one kid has had a moment where you, when the kids go away and you have that, like when you and your wife are by yourself, or even if you're by yourself and your spouse is at work, and all of a sudden when you don't have to manage the kids, you feel this incredibly like burst of energy. It's like, I attribute, it's why the guys, when they're football, like when they're training, they run with that parachute behind them so that when they take the parachute off, they can run that much easier. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that our kids drag us down. And but it's weird because Jacob is with my dad. They do their Route 66 trip every May. And it is so crazy, A, how unbelievably easy it is to have one kid, and how unbelievably easy it is to have one little baby at 10 months old. And all you do is you add that other 3-year-old, and it's just like, oh, it, you know, it's hard to get yourself out of that mental thing of, fuck, this is hard. Like, and it's, I feel like I'm on vacation. I feel alive. And it makes me laugh every time. I know, even because this is day one, okay, of no kid. just Jack. And I know that the sex is going to increase. I know it. We had a rough night last night, but we could still, boom, go. My wife and I, Joseph Barris, came and visited, and we stayed up until midnight, or I think it was almost 1, and Natalie still went to work. Fine. Was okay, because she, you know, got enough sleep and everything. You just, I don't know. It's and I went the whole day being fine, no problem. And it's just, it's so weird how that works out, but I love it. And I can't wait till next year, because next year we're going on a cruise and no kids, and it is going to be weird. And it's such a sad thing. Like, I really, that's kind of the thing I want to talk to my therapist about, is I want to figure out, like, I feel like it's okay. You know what I mean? I really, and I talked about it a little bit last week with Kira, where I feel like it's interesting that there's a new, like, wave of parenting where you feel like if you have a negative thought about your kid, you carry this humongous guilt and just like, oh my God, I'm a shitty parent. I need to talk to my dad too. I need to do an episode with him and kind of, I want to pick his brain more of it, you know, because I think it's hilarious that I'm like, you never had any script? No, I thought everything was fine. Why would it be weird? I would love to live in that world. But anyway, let's get into something a little more light. I heard that, here's the thing. I started doing it recently, and it's like one of those things. I think as you get older, you feel like these new things start happening. Like I talk about in my act about how I just randomly am getting hairy. It makes no sense as a man. Like, and my wife was, you know, complaining about her body changing. And I'm like, you know what, women, you get a little saggier, you get a little softer, but we grow hair. You know what I mean? Like you still look like a woman and attractive. I'm 33 years old and I'm 5 years away from looking like a troll, like eating goats under a bridge. Like you just, but it's so hard to be a lady aging. So screw you on that. And I know, cause I saw The Rebound, cause I'm an idiot fan of rom-coms. And, I watched it yesterday, and Catherine Zeta-Jones looks amazing. So if I was a chick, I'd be like, fuck that bitch. But, I did this. I've been doing this recently, and it's so sad and embarrassing, but I'm doing the snore awake. You know what I mean? Where you think you don't really snore, or maybe you only snore if you have a cold, or I know that I snore when it gets too hot in the house, so Natalie has to like turn on the AC or open a window or something so I cool off, and then I'll stop snoring. But I've started just doing the, you feel like you're dead asleep and all of a sudden and that wakes you up. Like that's you making your own noise wakes you up. And it's just like such a sucky ass moment. He's sitting there and going, oh fuck, what happened? Who's after me? There's a monster. Oh, it's you. You were the one making the monstrous noise that was so fucking loud. You woke your own self up. So that was sad. And then I wanted to like just to talk about the rest of the stuff. I have some other stuff that kind of frustrates me. I guess you could call them like suburban rage. Oh, I want to do this too. Somebody posted on the Facebook a while ago, and I had this idea and I wrote it down and I kept forgetting to mention it on the show itself, is I want to hear some poop horror stories. I think that would be fun for us all to laugh vicariously through each other's pain like we always do on this show. And so if you could send me your poop horror stories, then that would be fun and we could talk about them on the show. And if I have one, then I will definitely do that. I do have one. Oh, let's do it. Let's do a poop horror story. Look at this. Look at me. All right. Let's see. Will this work if I do this? Oh, it's not working because I'm not on the right thing. There we go. So my poop story happened very recently. And it was with Jack. He's doing the teething nuclear explosion in his underpants. And he was eating and doing really well. He's like wolfing down food. And then all of a sudden you kind of hear the fart and you think it's cute. Like you're like, oh, it's cute. He's farting, you know, and it's always muffled through the diaper. But then there's always that hint of like, I kind of think he sharted. I think that there was a lot of moisture. That is a humid fart. That is. And I don't know if moms go through the same thing. But as a dad, I was like, I'm sure it's fine. What could possibly go wrong? He's just, you know, he's working out some gas. He's eating his meal. And then all of a sudden, it starts to overflow. It starts to, like, and you see it in the high chair. And you're like, oh, boy. Oh, that is. And you know, and then you always have the accidental dipping your finger in it and going, no. Oh, no. That's what just happened. And that's living the dream as a parent. Is when you accidentally dip your finger in some fecal matter. So that's my poop story. I hope you enjoyed it. The other thing I want to talk about with some Suburban Rage is that, and I'm glad my wife stopped doing it, but I noticed it on a cup somewhere, and that made me think of it, is that I want to know, and guys, you could weigh in on this on the Facebook page or send me an email, show@thedadpodcast.com, but women wear lipstick, and to me as a guy, I think that is completely inappropriate, like in the sense that we want to kiss you, okay? We want to touch your lips. We want to do many a thing to your mouth. Like it is a wonderful place. I almost accidentally said glory hole, and that's not what I intended to mean, but I meant a glorious place to, you know, to have there and fun. And when you, the waxy coating of a lipstick is not appealing, not to mention the fact that when you, the whole idea of the lips is to make them attractive to where we, and we want to kiss them. That's what the mouth is for. And then now we kiss them and now we have some kind of residue situation that it's stuck back on us. I just don't understand how it has done any good, because I'm pretty sure that no man has ever looked at another woman and go, you know, if her lips were a little more red, that would be that would seal the deal for me. You know what I mean? Like, I want to know from the moms that listen to the show if your husband feels the same way about it. Because my wife now, she has a thing, because I hated when she would kiss me goodbye and she'd put chapstick on, like or the lip gloss or whatever. I'm like, why do you have to wear that? You have beautiful lips. They're gorgeous. Then I could kiss you whenever I want. You know, it's the same kind of thing of just come to bed naked. For the love of God. For the love of God, please stop wearing 40 layers of clothes so I can know what it's like to lay next to a woman and not a PE teacher. Sweet Mary, Mother of Jesus Christ. I'm pretty sure I did that inappropriately. But still, like, so I think, and I can't wait to hear your guys' response for this, but I think no lipstick. We don't need it. I don't need the lip gloss. I don't need any of that, because what I want to do is I want to kiss you on the mouth. I want to come in like the real thing, and I don't want to come off with some kind of residue or anything like that. I'm not a fan of that. So cut that out. This is another thing that I saw the other day that made me laugh out loud, that I saw in the news. And I just don't. It's funny. I'm getting older, and so now I drink a lot of coffee. Like, I just started looking back at my life. Like, if you would have said, you know, 15 years ago, you talked to me and said, you know what, you're going to love drinking beer at night and you're going to love drinking coffee black, I would have said, you know, screw you. And then I started to like, well, maybe I should see what other old like type things, you know, because my dad and even my grandparents started. It's funny to watch my parents slip into becoming my grandparents. That's really interesting to me, because my grandparents always, the 5 o'clock news, that was like, what if, you'd like... That's like what Survivor is to me, that it's on. We have to watch it. Let's do this. And it's, you know, we got to tune on the 5 o'clock news. And I think that's the next level. That's, I guess, over the hill or something. And so I tried watching the news at one point. And this is why I don't watch the news, is because of, I don't know if it's always been this way or it's just a new thing, because our culture is getting stupider and stupider as the days go by. But this is from the Fox 11 affiliate here in L.A., and they were doing a thing where they were showing some stories, like pictures, and the stories that were associated. And this is what happens when you let news people just vamp.
All right, if you've ever slept with an orangutan, well, then you know that, well, it can be a little gamey. Well, I haven't done this recently, but anyway, they like getting baths, like this 10-year-old enjoying a bucket of water from a zookeeper in Indonesia. Look at that face of his.
Well, they're very strong, and they can,
yes. He's cooperating, though.
Yes.
They can tear you limb from limb.
He probably is enjoying the cool water.
Well, there, yeah, yes. So but yeah, don't be at home trying to go and give an orangutan a bath.
At home, no, don't do that at home.
Don't try that at home, guys. You may get hurt. Listen, go outside and enjoy the sunshine. That's what I say.
Now, if that was on, like, I know they chuckled at the end of it, but it's that fake ass newscaster chuckle, like ha ha ha, because they don't know what else to say. They don't know how to stop fucking talking, which I know I'm guilty of that too, where you start filling it and keep going and going, but I don't know, like that she said, if you've ever slept with an orangutan, you know that they can get a little gamey. how easy that is. They have teleprompters. And I don't, maybe this is like, to me, if I was the program director of any new show, I'd go, read it, honey, all right? Because guess what? You are hired because you're Latino and we're in Los Angeles and you are hot. We didn't hire you for your opinions. Or if I'm a director, I would say, you know what? Let's find a hot Latina who has good opinions and can actually vocalize those opinions. You know what I mean? Like, there's a ton of them out there. Like, it's like there's a shortage. It's just weird who ends up getting on television that you could say, if you've ever slept with an orangutan, you know that it could get a little gamey. And then what do they follow that up with? They start talking about, like, this is just supposed to be a sweet moment of this guy, this orangutan getting a bath. And it's just this, like, dude who's dumping water on it. And the orangutan is, like, making a funny face. It's, like, what they're talking about. But then what they do is they turn it into, they could rip your face off. Like, they could go nuts, you know. And then, so then that, now it's a PSA. Now they have to say, all of you Los Angelinos out there, don't bathe an orangutan, guys. Like, Are you shitting me? Oh my God, they totally saved my life. Did you hear about this on the Fox 11 News? We were about to take the kids to an orangutan bathhouse. Huh? Yeah, they exist. They're real. They exist. The orangutan bathhouse. It's like a gay thing for orangutans. You know, they're primates too. They're gay animals. Penguins are gay. But here's the real point. We were about to take our kids there, and we didn't know that orangutans evidently can, you know, just pull your face apart. They'll just kill you. I mean, if you, and now, by the way, I think we've heard of maybe one primate attack, and but it was on Oprah, which means it counts as 10,000 or whatever. And then what's that movie? Now I'm going to have to look that up. That movie with Clint Eastwood that everybody should have seen. You're already yelling it. Let me look it up. What is it? Oh, this is going to bug me.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Every Which Way But Loose. Like, nobody's seen that where the orangutan is, you know, kicking the shit out of people and all that stuff. It's just, I don't know. Just so sad that they're supposed to be reporting and giving us the news. And like everybody says, we're at fucking war. And this is what these assholes are talking about. They're giving advice on not only having sex with an orangutan and understanding that you may need to keep some kind of Febreze spray nearby because it could get a little gamey. Which I would I would love to be able to describe any sexual experience as gamey. Like, I feel like I would be living my life a little crazier and so boring. If, like, how was that chick you were with last night? She's a little gamey. It was kind of nice. She had a, like, she tasted like she was wild. Like, it's not, she was not, you know, free range. She was even beyond that. It was, you know, there was a toughness to her. You had to really chew. You had to really just rawr, get in there and make it happen. Oh, that makes me a little happy on the inside. The other, like, I think I noticed this too. We went out and we went stopped off at like a fast food place, and this new trend that they're doing of everything has to be on artisan bread or ciabatta. Like, oh, it's a hamburger on ciabatta bread or artisan bread. And again, I've heard more about sleeping with an orangutan than I've heard people bitching about just a regular piece of bread or a roll. Like, that ciabatta bread to me is just shitty. And I don't know if it's because I have the palate of a redneck and I don't know what I'm supposed to, like, really be able to taste. But the majority of Americans, I think, like regular food. We like hot dogs. We like hamburgers. We like fried chicken. We like all that, you know. So just put it on a burger bun. And when you try to compete with each other like this, it actually blows up in your face, I think. Like, it's no good. It's no good. I'm babbling, as you could see already. And I hope you're enjoying it because I'm having a good time. So why the hell not? This is the other thing I had that was pissing me off. The aisles at the grocery store have become like this weird, I don't remember this being an issue. And I don't know if it's because now I have two kids and they have to give you that car that they tack on. So all of a sudden you need a Class A license to be able to drive the shopping cart through the grocery store. If you have more than one child and the kid is in the car, oh, I want to sit in the car. And I can only imagine if they get older, it's like, no, I want to sit in the car. No, I want to sit in the car. I have Jacob in the car and then Jack in the kid seat version of the on the cart. And then I put the and you have to, like, I need some kind of backup tone to be able to turn corners in there. And I feel like every time I walk around a corner, I don't know how they lost this. Carts need to be able to pass each other in your fucking aisles. Either that, or you need to put arrows on the ground like a parking lot, and there needs to be just one way. Because this bullshit of you can't pull over to the shoulder of the aisle and let somebody buy you anymore, especially if you're in the fucking double wide. I need, like, it's like I need a cart in front of me with lights and then another cart behind me with lights to escort me around that says, you know, wide load around the grocery store, because I try to get out of people's way And then also, let's, you know, I don't even get me started on the people in their scooters. You know what I mean? Like, just humongous. Or, and I have nothing against the elderly, but it's like, I just feel sorry for them, really, because it's harder for them to get out of people's way. And then you have people like me who's like, listen, bitch, I've got 45 minutes till nap time. I got to get some fucking goldfish and some rice cereal for milk later on today. And I got to do this. And you're in my fucking way. You're fucking up my whole day. And I'm trying, you know, you're body checking people with your cart and stuff like that. So, and I just don't understand why they can't just kick it out. Let it make it so everybody can go by each other and then nobody's frustrated. And then these, like, to add to it, they put those fucking displays. And I don't know who that works on. Like, honest to God, how much business do you make off of sticking fucking Oreo cookies in the cereal aisle? Like, what the fuck is that? Yes, put them right underneath the milk. That's a great idea. Put the little basket underneath the milk, because then you grab milk, you go, oh, what does taste amazing is Oreo cookies and milk. Yes. But I don't need them in random spots in the middle of the fucking grocery store. I never, and they always put all those dangly things that your kids grab on and then pull the fucking aisle over. That, like, no, I don't need a garlic press. And that, you know where I don't want to find it? In the chip aisle. Like, these random, just look like they look, it's like a scavenger hunt. Like, that's what it seems like. If that's what it was, it's like, oh, look, I found it. Now I get it for free. Then yes, but it's always some bullshit item that nobody ever wants, which is why they have to do it that way. And why can't the lesson be, hey, you have an abundance of this, shitheads, because nobody fucking wants it. Nobody wants to have it. So that's why you have too much of it. Just get fucking rid of it. Give it to people that are hungry and starving. Do that. Don't make me half-ass knock over your, you know, Golden Grahams display just because I'm trying to get some sangria. Like, I know. And here, all I could do is sit here, like, while I'm half yelling in my dining room, is a hope and pray that there's somebody listening to this going, right? Oh, my God. Yes, it fucking drives. Because, honest to God, it pisses me off. I go to the grocery store and I'm like, fucking hell. And then the deli counter thing, like, do I take a number or do I not take a number? Because I go up there, and if there's nobody there, yes, you don't take a number. But there needs to be, like, this stuff needs to be covered in high school. There needs to be a certain convention of etiquette, you know, that everybody understands so that we can all just get through our lives without passive-aggressively pissing each other off. And so if I walk up there, and there are two people on the fried chicken side of it, and I'm over at the deli counter, and to me they seem like two different departments, and I'm just sitting there waiting, and then all of a sudden they're like, yes, can I help you? And then somebody gives me a, oh, because I didn't know that they weren't together, you know what I mean? Like, and that they were actually here before me. Just, all you have to do is say, actually, I was here first, and just say it with a smile and look at me, and I'm going to be, oh, yeah, go. We're courteous people. There are very few assholes, I believe, in this world. Honest to God. I think what happens, though, is that because we don't, most people are ignorant to the fact that they're being an asshole. And that they're being dumb. And so we need to teach these kids in high school that the convention is two or more people at the deli counter, take a number. Simple as that. And then, you know, get the half moron that you got working fresh out of, you know, junior college back there to say he knows to go to the number system and keep it, you know, fucking updated. Because when I pull out there and I see three people and it says 97 and it says now serving 56, I'm like, are you, oh, fuck. You know, you have that moment of like, now it's going to be, and they're like, but there's nobody fucking here and you don't know if you're doing the right, and just fucking help us all out. Like, that's all you really got to do. Get rid of the fucking middle of the aisle displays, because I don't need to feel like I'm on American Gladiators pushing a shopping cart through the store and, you know, trying to keep my kids, you know, if they're losing their shit. Because again, you've given me a double wide fucking cart. I just need to get my groceries and get the fuck out of there. And also, you don't have to be so smug about placing that little divider on the conveyor belt either. Like, look at me like, oh, don't you commingle your groceries with mine. I know what you want. I just feel like that's what that communicates. And people are always like, oh, you think you're going to sneak your groceries in and then you're going to pay for them? That's what you think? You think that's what I'm going to buy your groceries? It's like, no, like you put a gap and it's not like it's, you know, a 40 yard long conveyor belt. Like, the guy could see me get in line and start to offload my shit. But I guess somewhere, somehow, there has to be some idiot check person and then they just like, I don't like being asked, is this your item? So now we have to have these dividers so that we can just have one less moment of talking to each other and being courteous to each other, because evidently the public cannot handle that. They cannot handle just being kind and courteous to one another. That's all I had to say today. So I'm going to wrap it up with that. So if you want, give me a call, 408-228-4911. You could send an email to... Oh, I do want to talk about the one thing. Speaking of emails, I had an email here that I've been wanting to read for a while. This comes to us from Ben. He says, hey, guys, thought you might enjoy my wife's new thing. Whenever she's changing a diaper and it's a number two situation, she just yells, turd alert, and I know it's time for me to wrangle our daughter. She likes to go apeshit whenever she's being changed now. 17. Yeah, why is that? Like... It's weird. I forgot that. I don't know if Jacob did this. This is what I think the older kids always get a little bit of a leeway. They get a get out of jail free card. It's because of the trauma and there's puke and piss and shit that it's like some kind of third world prison when you the early part of parenting, because there's just so much fecal matter and just disgustingness and all that stuff that you kind of block it out. I think your brain like treats it like a trauma unnecessarily because it's fun still at moments, you know, but and so you don't remember. So when you go back the second time, you keep thinking Jacob was not like this. You know? Like, this is so horrible. But he's like, Jack is like, you try to change his diaper, you give him 40,000 toys and he just wants to roll over and crawl away and somehow leave a trail of shit all over your house. And then he's getting too big for the changing table. Like, and why isn't that an invention? Why don't they have, you know, like when they milk a cow, they put little bars on either side of it. I need a wrangling pin for my child. But he says, and we'll do that. We'll go into moments of the week because he has one here. He says, my moment of the week was getting to spend all day Saturday with my daughter. I work third shift, so I don't get a lot of alone time with her. But my wife had to work at a wedding. She's a photographer. So it was just me and the little one. Took her to my parents so she could see her grandparents and her great-grandfather. The next morning when she woke up, she ran to my chair and wanted to snuggle with me. I can't describe how good it felt for her to be connected to me from the day before. Great moment. Also was listening to old podcasts. Oh, yeah, we talked about before this idea I had a while ago of a sex coaster or sex puck. And I think I'm going to make them. Like, the more I think about it, I think I'm going to kick down some cash and make them. this is the idea. The idea is that for anybody who's been to a churrascaria or a Brazilian steakhouse knows what I'm talking about, is what they do is they have little coasters that is green on one side, red on the other. So whenever you want them to come by and drop off the food, you leave it green and then they go, would you like some filet mignon wrapped in bacon kind of thing. But if you're full and you don't want them to offer, you just turn it over and it's red. So then they don't have to come by. They know that you're eating and you're kind of full or whatever. And what I thought that this simple solution would also apply in a married person's bedroom, because we've all had that dreaded moment where we wake up and your wife says to you in the morning while you're, you know, doing breakfast or whatever, she's like, I kind of wanted you last night. And you're like, well, who does that fucking help? You know? So I feel like if you get a sex puck that you can set on the nightstand, then you can, and it works all, it's completely applicable, because like say like my wife has some kind of weird new understanding that I'm too tired to have sex, which I think is hilarious because I'm a big fan of her. I'm a big fan of touching her. I'm a big fan of all of that. So the idea of not being interested in that is just, no, I don't care how tired I am. And maybe that is just a guy thing. I think girls feel the same way, though. Maybe it just takes a little more finesse. Or I think, honestly, God, I think girls are like, they're just as bad as us. But I don't know women. I should have had a woman on the show when I'm talking about this. But here's my point. You could just leave it green. When the door's open, it's like, why not? And maybe, you know, some people, you know, they don't like doing it when the visitor is coming to town. You know what I mean? The little crotching... This is what happens when you just have vomit in the mouth. But I was going to say, the crotch cleaning lady comes by once. What an asshole. And you know, so you're like, that's a timeout zone. That's a downtime. That's this ride. That's the Matterhorn at Disneyland, which is never open for those of you not from Southern California. You know, you could just, then it's red during then. And then when the guy goes, when he goes to bed, you know, and he's going to be like, Oh, I guess she's into. Or, you know, if you're more the chick who's like, there's very few times that I'm in the mood, you can flip it over, and you can even get two. You can have one for him, and then it's like, you know, when you have to launch a nuclear missile, how they always need the two guys with their keys and the submarine, they have to turn them at the same time. So when you come into the bedroom at night, you look down, you see double green, boom, game on. That's when we do it. Yeah, I'm a really big fan of my idea. So I need to make this a reality, and we'll figure out some way of getting it to you guys. And I'm going to spend, since I still got a little bit of time, this was another thing I cannot believe. It was in relation to the Clorox thing, and I skipped over it. It's not really a moment of the week, so I'm going to have to come back from that. But I went to visit my in-laws recently because, you know, Natalie, she's got some family members that aren't doing so well, and her dad needed to have an operation, and we hadn't seen him, and so she took some time off. And so we go up there, and we try to do the nice thing where we don't get to see them all the time because of her, you know, work schedule is different now, and it's harder with two kids to travel, as we all know. And so we drive up there on Saturday. We're going to come home on Monday. Saturday, the kids, for whatever reason, neither one of them sleep in the car ride, but it wasn't a horrible car ride. They just didn't sleep, which meant they were really tired. And so we got a hotel because I didn't want to stay at my in-law's house. And so we do that. Then the next day, there was plans to go to her sister's house and play with bunnies and do a barbecue. And I said, well, the kids need to get a nap, especially Jacob. Like, Jack will sleep pretty much anywhere because he's, you know, a flesh slug. He just kind of passes out and it's not that big a deal. But Jacob, like, he'll keep going, and but he needs to still get a nap. And so my wife was like, well, we got to do, you know, we have to see. We're not here that often. I'm like, and it pissed me off because I had this feeling of he's a three-year-old. He's not fucking Miss America on a tour. He doesn't need to go see everybody. And I don't understand this bullshit of everybody needs to meet my baby and my child. I love my children to death, but they're not fucking the Queen of England, and nobody better take them to dinner. But I shouldn't say that. But here's my point. Who cares? Who's going to look at a baby and have an in-depth conversation? Or, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't understand this desire to meet a baby. I've never had a baby other than my own children. I've never had a baby that I want to meet. And I honestly don't think anybody wants to meet my fucking babies. It's a courtesy because everybody knows how they feel about their kids. So they think it's unfair if you don't feel that same way about their other people's kids. And it's like, no, that's not how it's supposed to fucking work. You're supposed to look at your kids and think, oh, they're angels and they're saints. And you're supposed to talk about other people's kids like they're shitheads. That's the order of life. That is the way Mufasa wanted it to be. And so we go to my sister-in-law's house, and we had a great time. He had fun. He didn't lose it. But then as soon as we hit the car, they do the goosh. They just pass out, right? And he had a little bit of a stuffy nose. And so I go, we set him in there. And there's no place to put him in my in-law's house. Again, not his problem. And then because they're older, the house is a little warmer, and I like things cold, so that compounds on top of that it's warm in there. And if you've had like a sinus or a little bit of a congestion, you know that if it's hot and stuffy in the house, it just amplifies it. And I was trying to suck his nose because he doesn't like to blow it, and but he's tired. And then he just went delirious on me where he could barely keep his eyes open because he was so exhausted. He's like, I need the orange thing you blow up, and just talking nonsense. And then I said, you know what, I'm going to take you back to the hotel. We're going to take a quick nap. I pick him up, and he's like, no, I don't want to. I go, trust me, buddy. And I'm like petting his back and trying to put it. I opened that door, and it was like he just turned into a badger. It was the weirdest thing in the world. He backed up, like lifted his head up off my shoulder and worked my face like a heavy bag. My son punched me in the face repeatedly, like boom, 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 boom. I don't know how many blows he got in. It just all happened so quick. And I looked at him and I got wide-eyed and I fucking snapped. I said, are you fucking kidding me right now? You don't punch me in the face, which I thought was hilarious because you could work the body, son, but not the face. And so I go, now I'm angry. You know, I'm completely my father. I've got him over my shoulder, like carrying him like he's, you know, some kind of wench, and I'm a Viking who has just pillaged the, you know, like, and so I'm like, I throw him into the minivan. And then Natalie comes out, and she's like, she knows that I'm pissed, and she knows exactly what's happened. She knows that I said that earlier that we should give him a nap. And she goes, is there anything I could do to help? And then, of course, me being the mature, loving husband that I am, I go, thanks. No, you've done enough. Thanks. Thanks a lot for this. And I jump in the minivan and like, you know, peel out. And my son, Jacob's in the car. He's like, I want to go back to Grammy's. And I go, no, you punched me in the face. Do you have any idea how uncool that is? And I'm, of course, way over explaining to the three-year-old. You have punched me in the face, I keep saying. And I go, you know, I don't give you what you want when you whine or you cry. So let me explain to you what you punch me in the face. That is a deal breaker, son. That is over. And so then he tries to calm down. Like, now he's not really crying a lot. He's like, Dad, can I please go? Because that's, you know, we've talked to him about, well, calm down and ask right. And I go, I appreciate you asking right, but no, you punched me in the face. This is my favorite part. I have never laid a hand on you, and you punched me in the face. And that was the moment that I realized, I'm not going to shift gears or whatever, but I do think after that moment, and again, I'm not trying to get up on a pulpit, I'm just being honest about my thoughts, is that you know, I think it's interesting that a lot of people get up on a soapbox about spanking versus timeouts and say that timeouts, you know, make for less violent kids. And that kid worked me like a heavy bag, and I've never laid a hand on him. I've never spanked him. It has never happened. Nothing. So he's gotten timeouts, and he did. So I think that we're dealing with like a terrible three situation where there's a new level of boundaries, and he's got these like emotions that he can't process vocal, like verbally. So he you know, and it's also, my dad brought it up where he's like, he goes, well, if you raise your kid to be independent, and we, you know, I've joked on the show too, is that when you raise your kid to be independent, you also have to deal with that independence. So there's a, you know, a downside to it. And this was the downside. And I remember thinking that as frustrated as I was in that moment, it was after I calmed down a little bit on the drive over, that I'm like, you know what? I did kind of like the idea that if he got pushed to a corner that he really didn't like, then he's going to come out swinging. There's a sense of like, I do want him to be able to stand up for himself and go get it. And I don't know, maybe you guys would disagree and think, you know, that's no way to raise another human being. But I don't know. I think that there are tendencies to where you could come across a shitty person, and I don't want him to punch them in the face like that. But if he's in danger, I do. I want him to be able to do that, but I don't. And if he's not in danger, I want to be able to say, hey, fuck you, get out of my face, you know, that kind of stuff. And I'll go, oh, I'm sorry, you know, that kind of thing. So we get back to the, and then when he calms down, this is the other thing he starts going, which I was like, wow, that it hit me harder than I ever thought it would. And I wasn't ready for that level of parenting. I thought it wasn't going to happen until he was like 12 or 13, but he starts going, I don't like you. And I was like, whoa, that was really weird, because I know that I have boundaries and stuff like that, but like, it just kind of hit me that we all have to go through that. We all have to have that moment. And I just realized, well, maybe some of you haven't. Maybe you've been lucky enough, or maybe you're doing something better than me that never happened. But just to hear that kid for that first time, especially when you feel like you, now, I feel like, I don't know. I need to talk to my dad, but I feel like now with the way parents, kind of society has dictated the way we treat our children, and you do all this shit for them to make this better life than what you know, and they have no perspective on what you came from. And so it's hard to expect them to have that, but, and then they have them say, I don't like you. Oh my gosh. And I was like, well, you don't, then it just fell out of my face without any hesitation. I go, you don't have to like me. I'm your father. I go, it's my job to make you a good person. And then, you know, and then, again, over explaining to a 3-year-old, but I'm like, it's my job to make you a good person. And I said, I can't in good conscience allow you to behave that way. You punched me in the face, son. You have no idea how unacceptable that is. So we get close to the hotel. This is my favorite part. He goes, I guess this is kind of going to be my moment of the week, because it was kind of fun and it comes out okay. But I pull up to the hotel, and I walk around, and as we're pulling into the hotel, he goes, I'm going to punch you in the face again if you take me to the hotel. Or no, he says, I'm going to punch you in the face again. And I said, wait, are you saying you're not going to punch me in the face? Like, I thought he was trying to do that so he could get back to his Grammy's house. And I go, he goes, no. And he's at that age where he doesn't quite understand the no and the yes, you know, because even I don't understand when you're supposed to say yes. And so you do the thing, yes, I will not, or whatever. So I go, so you're saying you will not punch me in the face? He goes, no. I go, you're saying you will punch me in the face again? And he said, yes, I will punch you in the face again if you take me to the hotel. And I parked the van at that point, and I turn around and I looked him in the eyes and I said, bring it on. Let's fucking dance, Toto. Let's. Oh, it makes me laugh so hard now, because I was serious. Like, I was like obviously we weren't gonna. It wasn't gonna turn into Beat It. Where I was gonna explain to him why I was strapping our hands together and then give him, you know, a butter knife from the buffet at the hotel, and then, yeah, dun 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 dun, and we start doing some kind of Shark versus Jets from West Side Story number. But I did definitely look him in the eyes and like, bring it on. Bring it. Let's do this. So I come around, get him out of the car, and I open the door, and he had a moment where it's like, you could see in his eyes that he's like, well, I've set this out, and he's not showing any fear, and he just caved. He just was like, all right. And so he let me go in, take him in. He fought me to go to sleep, and then eventually he passes out and sleeps for a while. Then I have to go back and find a way to, because my It's so annoying, and it's not necessarily their fault. There's just, we've all been there where there's a ton of shit happening at your in-laws or even your family's house. So my mother-in-law is dealing with her ex-husband who he's got all this cirrhosis of the liver and all this stuff. And, you know, she's got her son there who's living in the garage trying to get his shit together. And But that doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And then my father-in-law is there, and he's got, you know, supposed to be having angioplasty, and but now they're delaying that because one the ex-husband is in way worse shape. And it's just, why is the 72-year-old, you know, mom taking care of these this guy when he has, you know, two children? One obviously lives there, but doesn't do anything, doesn't have a job because he can't get a job, I guess, or whatever. But it's like, well, fucking take care of your dad, you know? And he was sick, too, which it was just like, fuck, it was just a lot to be involved in. So I call my wife and say, you know, hey, I know it's time for Jack to go to sleep. She has no way to get to me. So I'm like, you know, I just wanted to run it by her because, like, I didn't know what to do. And I don't know if anybody has ever had this happen to him, but my son was not behaving like my son anymore. It was like I was interacting with someone else's child. To go from punching me in the face to saying he didn't like me. Oh, that was another thing. We were in the hotel. He calmed down, but he was just like, I don't want to go to sleep. I want to go back to Grammy's. I said, son, I love you very much. I'm not talking about this anymore. I've explained it to you. I go, the only way to get what you want is to hurry up and take a nap. So you should take this energy that you're spending on fighting me and focus on closing your eyes and breathing until you fall asleep. And he goes, I hate you. And I was like, wow. And inside, I'm like, oh, wow. Like, you have no fucking idea. Really? You hate me? You, oh. And I know that he doesn't really know, but it's just, it's a weird thing to have that said to you. And you, and it makes you weirdly hurt and combative at the same time, is how I felt. I keep saying you, and I don't mean you, the listener. I mean, I was just talking out loud. But yeah, it was weird. And I go, again, I'm your father. You don't have to love me. Because I know that there's, you know, going to be moments like this. I just thought they were going to be fucking 10 years from now. But so I guess they're going to happen again. I'm sure what all the people who have teenagers are like, oh, it's not over, dipshit. So I call Natalie to say, what do you think I should do, to bounce some ideas off of her? And I go, well, I think I'm going to try and wake him up because he's been asleep for 45 minutes and maybe that was enough. We'll go there, hang out for a little bit. So I go to wake him up, and he goes delirious again. He starts crying, starts talking nonsense, like, why did you do this? And I want to play with her, and all this random stuff. And I had to hold him like he was a baby almost and kind of rock him. And he was, like, doing this weird, like, eyes couldn't focus, like, because he was just so exhausted. And I felt like the shittiest parent ever because I had taken priority above my children, or the priority was given to my fucking in-laws, the grown-ups, again, so he could do his fucking meet the baby tour over my kid's own, you know, happiness and well-being. And I hope that I won't do it again. It's one of those things where you learn the lesson, and it's unfortunate that that's the way you have to learn it, but such is life. And so I get him to calm back down. I get him to go back to sleep. I call Natalie and go, listen, I can't get him up. Like, and I was telling my friend Joseph Bears about this, and he was like, well, why didn't you just pick him up and put him in the car? Like, and I go, honestly, I was thrown for a loop. I was off balance. I didn't know what to do because all of it was foreign. There wasn't a single ounce of what my son normally behaves like in there. It was like the lack of sleep had brought the demon out in my child, and I didn't know. I thought that my world was lost. I was lost at sea. No, I had no bearings, no nothing, and I couldn't think because I thought any idea I have is gone now. I'm just square one. So I call her back, and then I say, hey, do you think your mom can bring you and Jack to the hotel? Because I can't get him in the car. I don't know. And so then my wife's like, yeah, she could take us. But then, you know, it's hard because, you know, she's going to have to drive without Jack being in a car seat. So Natalie's going to have to hold on to him. And then it's, you know, my 72-year-old mother-in-law is driving the car, and it's all that weird stuff. So sorry, I'm a little distracted because I think Jack was waking up, but I don't know if he is. No, he's not. So there's all that. And so then all of a sudden something happens with, my mother-in-law's ex-husband, and he's like moaning and groaning in pain in the background. And so she's like, I can't. And then Natalie has to like walk outside, and it's overwhelming. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do it. So I grab the kid, I pick him up, and I take him in the car seat. And I go, hey, we got to go get mom. I got to put you in your car seat. And then he was fine. It was the weirdest thing ever. He was totally fine. No problem at all. And then we get there, and then that's a whole lot of ball of wax where it's like Natalie was starting to make dinner now. I told her everything was okay, but I just want to take him back and get him to the hotel, get him out of that environment, get him out of the, like, it's just fucking tense. But the moment of the week, though, part of it that goes into this whole story is that he just wants to sit on the couch. We had a little something to eat, and my mother-in-law is constantly trying to do, like, these guilt trips to let, even now, okay, she has a, a, a son in her garage who is convicted of a meth possession. And then now she has two men, one who's had three strokes in the last 5 years. He can barely walk. And then now she's got a guy who's got cirrhosis of the liver, three cracked ribs, and, you know, is like 1 foot in the grave, unfortunately. And she wants us to let our three-year-old stay there. Let's discount the fact that there's literally a man in the waning moments of his life there. And that's just the environment every three-year-old needs to be in. We all need to confront the end of time, like our end of days, as, you know, 3 years old. And like at some point she's going to have to take a shower, and who's going to take care of my fucking kid, you know? But it was worth it, because then she said, well, Grammy wishes you could stay. I would make you waffles in the morning. Are you fucking trying to bribe my son? And my son, God love him. Oh, he's such a good kid, and he's so fucking smart. And so he goes, well, maybe next time, Grammy. Oh, it was amazing. He's 3 years old. She's 72, and he's talking her down off the ledge. He's calming her down. He's like, maybe next time. And just the sweetest, most considerate, polite, mature thing to go from literally working my face like a heavy bag to saying, well, maybe next time, Grammy, and be so mature and together, you know, and it was great. I was so happy about it. I loved it. And my moment of the week with Jack has, you know, it's really fun. I like now we have almost like a parlor trick, which I know seems, I don't like the idea of making my kids do tricks, but I like that it's a communicative thing. Like, I like that I can go, hi, Jack. And he goes, hi, Dad. I go, hi, Jack. He goes, hi, Dad. And then he goes, da, 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 da. And I go, Jack, 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 Jack. And he laughs and he smiles and he's such a fucking happy baby. It's, you know, life is good. Life is really good. So Moments of the Week brought to you by Stitcher. Please go to thedadpodcast.com. Click on the Stitcher link on the left-hand side. Stitcher is a fantastic way to listen to your podcast, because you don't have to sync it to your laptop. If you're out on a road trip and you're like, oh, shit box, I didn't sync up with my laptop, and now I can't listen to my favorite podcasts, which I think is actually their slogan. It is, oh, shit box, I didn't. But it comes right through your cell phone's connection, or if you're connected to Wi-Fi while you're at work or whatever, it also will work through that. You can share your favorite episodes with your friends on Facebook, and if you have favorite podcasts, it'll recommend other podcasts available on Stitcher. And just about every podcast out there is available on Stitcher. So please, if you have a smartphone, a BlackBerry, Android-operated phone, iPhone, just click on the banner or the little link on thedadpodcast.com. Tell them what kind of phone you have, and it's a free download. It's free. If you already listen on Stitcher, use that to tell your friends on Facebook about the show, because here's what else I learned, is that through all of you guys going back and downloading all the previous episodes, we had more downloads in a given day than we had since we started the show, and we made the What's Hot page on the front of the iTunes thing or whatever. So if you can, if you guys can help spread the word with the Facebook, all we really need right now is about 400 more listeners. If we, and which I know maybe seems like a lot, but if we had 400 more listeners, then we would be on the What's Hot page, and then it would just be all up from there. Then that's just the exposure that we need, and then I would love to be able to do, you know, three of these a week, and then I could have rotating guests, and the bigger the show is, the bigger the guests I can get, and I will do anything I can to give you guys as much content and entertainment as I can, and thank you guys so much again. I know it sounds cheesy, but I really do mean it. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate all of you guys taking the time to download the show and listen, and the support. And I know we're in this transitional phase and starting over anew, and everybody had nothing but kind things to say. I appreciate your emails. It's honest, as weird as it sounds, or I don't know if it's cool or not, but it honestly is what keeps me going. And it really makes me feel like, God, all right, good. I'm doing something that is good. You know what I mean? So I really, really do appreciate it. And what I also appreciate is everybody who's clicking through the Amazon banner at thedadpodcast.com. We get a little taste, and it doesn't cost you anything, so please do that. And that's it. So, again, help me out if you can. Please share the episodes. If you go to thedadpodcast.com, if you have a favorite episode, you can just, you know, click share it on Facebook. You can email it to a friend, all that jazz. So, on behalf of my good friend, me, this is Justin Worsham saying stay frosty.